You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, March 4th, 2024. You're listening to me, Grandpa Dan, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. We're starting off yet another work week, and I'm grateful for you starting off the work week with us here at Radio Albion. I always start off, as you all well know, reminding you of our Spin Longshanks support links here on the Daily Nationalist. Encourage you to drop him a postcard, an email, or whatever suits you, but we do want to let him know. I know I've been conversing regularly with Sven via the email system, which seems to work pretty well, and he does very much appreciate hearing from all of you. It means a whole lot to him. May not seem like it. You may not even hear back from him, because especially if you're using snail mail, because of the turnaround and postage, and he's only allowed to write a certain number of regular postal letters per week. The email system gets around that as long as you check the box that says request response from sender. That'll take a few extra cents out of your account, and that will enable him to email you back. And there's my understanding is there's not a limit on the number of emails he can respond to. It really is a better system. I realize some of you don't like using your actual information, but that's whatever. But it does seem to work a lot better. I've got a couple of stories I'm using here, and I'm just going to kind of use them as a jumping off point. I will read through some of it, probably not the whole thing on either one, but with an overriding theme. Now, I have to start off with a disclaimer, because this is going to be a topic of a geopolitical nature. And here at Radio Albion, our geopolitical analyst is Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who knows way more on these subjects than I do. This is just my simple take. I do observe things. I do consider myself pretty good at just simply making observations and kind of just looking, reading the tea leaves, as one could say, and just looking at these things and coming to my own conclusions, sharing my own opinions. And that's what we're doing here today. I have no idea. Dr. Johnson may decide to talk about this very subject on this Thursday show. I don't know. I haven't discussed it with him, but I'm going to talk about it today because I do find it interesting. I've got a couple of, like I said, I've got two different stories. And what these stories represent to me is something has happened. Israel, I'm probably going to title this show Israel Throws a Tantrum or Israel Throws a Temper Tantrum, because that's how all of this comes across. Now, up to this point, when it comes to Russia, when it comes to Moscow, Israel has really worked hard to remain more or less ambiguous as far as their position towards Moscow. I mean, on the one hand, they will say, like, we support Ukraine, and but on the other hand, they've made it clear they're not sending any weapons. They're not going to get that involved, and there were certain lines they didn't want to cross with Russia. Now we're seeing a change in that. Let's just go ahead and jump into the most recent story, because the second story I've got is a little older, but it ties in with this. Both these stories come from RT, and this one is headlined, Israel to get more aggressive with Russia, MP. An Israeli lawmaker has suggested that his government will take a harder line against Russia by boosting its support for Ukraine, because it sees Moscow as somehow involved in the Hamas war against West Jerusalem. Israel will take a more aggressive stance against Russia, MP Amir Weitman told U.S. media outlet Business Insider in an article published on Saturday. He added that amid its current battle with Hamas, his government doesn't have munitions to spare, but if the war in Gaza ends before the conflict in Ukraine, Israeli weapons would find their way to Kiev. Whiteman made his comments in response to plans by Israel, revealed on Wednesday at the UN, to provide an early warning system to help Kiev counter Russian airstrikes and drone attacks. The announcement by Gilad Erdan, Israel's permanent representative to the UN, did not come out of the blue, the lawmaker said. Now, we'll get into this whole UN thing. That's pretty much relates to the other story we have. Now, like I said, up to this point, Israel is taking great care to not antagonize Russia. And what we're seeing here is a very abrupt departure from that. Now we have open hostility towards Russia coming from Israel. Now, as this Jewish MP says, this doesn't come out of the blue. Something has happened. I don't know what it is. I can speculate, and we'll speculate here, and I'll say up front, this is simply speculation, not like I have inside sources. But common sense tells us Israel had this policy of purposely not antagonizing Russia, at least not openly, and that has changed. That is this. You could write this one story off and say, "Well, that's just one MP. He could be saying whatever he wants to say." But as we look at the UN story, in which we will hear shortly, this is obviously a government position. Now, an abrupt change such as this signals something has happened. We don't know what, but something has happened. Israel was making all of these bold threats against their neighbors. And they're just going to start bombing the hell out of Lebanon. They're going to strike Beirut. They're going to maybe even just attack Iran. They're just going to do this. They're just do whatever they want. And all of that suddenly kind of got real quiet. You'll notice that? I mean, a couple of weeks ago, they were talking hella shit about how, well, they were just going to go ahead and just basically light the Middle East on fire. And now that's kind of all quietened down, hasn't it? It's all gotten rather quiet. Now, if I had to guess, and I do, because again, I don't know, so we just have to guess. It seems to me quite probable that Russia has non-publicly told Israel to tone it down. That perhaps Russia has told Israel, you know, we've turned a blind eye while you've made these air raids into Syria and bombed different areas in Syria. And you know, we've let that go. They've got air defense systems there and they haven't shot down a bunch of Israeli planes. I think it's a fair speculation to say that perhaps Moscow has told Israel those days are over. You're not going to sit there and there's not going to just bomb everybody in the world. And this would make sense because if you have the U.S., which will come out and make these stupid statements about how they don't want a wider war in the Middle East, and then they do nothing to stop a wider war in the Middle East. Now, if you wanted to stop a wider war, you wanted to stop this conflict, as it were. I don't know how much of a conflict. It seems pretty one-sided. But if you wanted to stop this conflict from spreading from Israel and the Palestinians to the broader region, you would have to confront the party that's spreading it. When you have Israel, you've had Israel come out and essentially threaten all of their neighbors, threaten to bomb Lebanon, threatened to bomb Iran, continuing to bomb Syria, doing assassinations all over the Middle East. It's not hard to see who it is that's spreading the conflict. It might also be interesting to speculate if whether behind the scenes, the U.S., which is just a lapdog to Israel, some of the people in the U.S. government that also don't want to be drug into a Middle East conflict, kind of knew about this and just was like, wink, wink, whatever y'all want to do. But that's, you know, not necessarily likely, but it's within the realm of possibility. We never have the information. It'd be cool if we did, but we don't have information. So yes, we have to speculate. We have to guess. We have to say, well, this would be a possibility. And that's what people do. Even governments do that. If they don't have the intelligence surrounding something, they have to speculate. Well, it's possible that this party is doing this and in contact with this other party. This is simply what we're doing as well, because we don't. We're always going to be kept in the dark. It's just how these things work. But if you were trying to stop a broader conflict, you would have to go about it by confronting the party that is spreading it. Hezbollah is not going around the Middle East starting fires. Damascus is not going around attacking its neighbors. Iran is not invading anybody or threatening to bomb and attack anybody. All of this is being done by Israel. So if you wanted to stop this from spreading into a wider conflict, and look, everybody in the region, not Israel, does not want a broader conflict. You know, I mean, look, all of these Arab countries, you know, they could gang up and attack Israel. They obviously do not want a broader conflict. They were making all of these, the usual statements denouncing what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. But, I mean, they're doing very little. Even Hezbollah, which is hardcore. You know, Hezbollah's, they're hardcore. And even they, their reaction to this has been very restrained. I mean, yes, they're doing some attacks on Israel and Israel positions, but it's obviously just enough to keep Israel committing some forces to that area and not being able to just simply abandon it and concentrate all their forces on Gaza and on the Palestinians. But it's been a very restrained response, even from Hezbollah. So it's pretty apparent that nobody in the region, the other nations in the region, they don't want a broader conflict. Again, the conflict, the threat of the spread of conflict, is all coming from Israel. If you've got somebody running around lighting fires everywhere, you got to find the arsonist. You can't just go around and wag your finger at the people whose houses are threatened to be burned down. So it would make sense then that Russia, to speculate, I believe it's a pretty safe bet to speculate, that Russia has basically told Israel, you're not going to do that. You're not going to go, you're not going to just have free reign to just start bombing everybody in the region and spreading this conflict. We know you want to get the U.S. involved in a war with Iran. You know, we know you want to do this and that, and it's just not going to happen. We've turned a blind eye to you running these air raids and bombing positions in Syria. We've turned a blind eye to that. But those days are over. Again, pure speculation, but something has changed. Israel didn't go from a policy of political ambiguity towards Russia and now all of a sudden has done a 180 out of the blue. There is a motivation for that. Governments don't change policy willy-nilly just because they feel like it. Now, they will give justifications that appeal to emotionalism to the populace, of course, but actual hard change in policy, which we're witnessing here with Israel concerning Russia. Something causes that. It means something has changed. The political ambiguity towards Moscow served a purpose. That's why they were doing it. Now something has changed where that is no longer serving a purpose. It's no longer serving a purpose for them. So now they're taking a different tack. They're taking a different standing. And it basically comes down to the usual thing of threats. Oh, we're going to provide this now to Ukraine. We're taking a harder core stance. Weitman, who heads the libertarian faction of Israel's ruling Likud party, was less restrained during an RT interview in October. Russia is supporting Nazi people who want to commit genocide on us, and Russia will pay the price, he said. The MP added, we will make sure that Ukraine wins. We will make sure that you pay the price for what you have done. Business Insider said Israel may have already torched its relationship with Russia by pledging to supply an early warning system to the Ukraine. The system is similar to Israel's Seva Adom radar, which quickly detects rocket launches and broadcasts alerts to endangered areas so civilians can take shelter. Now, it's interesting here again. He goes on and says, what you have done, you know, talking about Russia, what you have done, you're going to pay for what you have done, and accuses Moscow of being involved in their conflict with the Palestinians. But he won't say specifically what. That's what's interesting. What is the what? What is it that Russia's done? I don't think it's a case of Russia hasn't done anything and this guy's just gone off the rails. Russia has done something. We're just not privy to it. I want to go ahead and switch over to the other The other story here, and this one's a little older, and we've kind of referenced it here. And the headline to this one is Israel accuses Moscow of siding with forces of destabilization. Russia has sided with enemies of the quote-unquote free world that seek global instability and have weaponized the UN against Israel, the Jewish state's permanent representative to the organization has claimed. Moscow has dismissed Gilead Erdan's accusations as quote-unquote delirium. At what point ever has the UN done anything that has curbed Israel doing whatever they want? I mean, they've weaponized the UN against poor, innocent Israel. Now, we just had... I'll get into that here in a minute. Let's keep reading. The senior diplomat leveled multiple accusations at Moscow in a speech to the UN General Assembly, New York, on Monday, the two-year anniversary of open Russian-Ukrainian hostilities. Erdan effectively equated Russia with Hamas and criticized Moscow for having contacts with the Palestinian militant group. Imagine having the audacity to claim that other countries, namely countries that are like multiple times bigger than your little state in the Middle East, and sitting here and throwing a temper tantrum because you're not allowed to talk to the people that we don't like. Both our countries, Ukraine and Israel, are fighting a battle for our survival. We are now living in an era during which forces of instability act with impunity. International law be damned, morality be damned, and peace and security be damned, he proclaimed. This one small paragraph, this statement is so loaded with projection. I don't even think I need to, point it out. As I said earlier, there is one nation in that area which is doing everything they can, basically, and has been threatening everybody to spread this conflict at the fastest rate. And it's not Saudi Arabia. It's not Iran. It's not Syria. It's Israel. And yet they project this. He projects this on Russia. He projects this on everybody else. Oh, the forces of instability, the forces of evil. We're fighting for our very survival while we carpet bomb civilians in densely populated Gaza. They tell the Palestinians, go south or we'll bomb you. Then they bomb them while they're going south. Then after they go south, then they bomb them there. This whole thing, I tell you, I'm going to probably use the picture of this guy making this speech at the UN, wearing the Jude star, like he just escaped Auschwitz. You know, yes, he did that. That's not something photoshopped on, making this speech. Now, you look at these statements and this reaction, this hysteria, and you have to look at this in the light, but they just got down massacring a bunch of people who showed up, you know, a bunch of starving people showed up for food, and they started gunning them down and shooting at them with rifles and tanks. You know, at some point in time, I always say, Israel has the worst knack in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, the public relations is not necessarily, I don't know. They used to have better PR than this. To show up when we have the context here, we look and you have this context of they gun down starving people showing up trying to get some flour. And to think all of that is equated by showing up with the stupid, you know, Auschwitz Jew star pinned on your suit, and you act like that's like your badge. It's like if you're playing with kids, you know, you're playing with kids and they'll make up rules. They go, oh, but wait, I've got shields. That attack didn't work. I have shields here. You can't get through my shields. That's a shield. He's got, you know, we're supposed to be reminded of the Holocaust. I think They're really wringing that dry, you know? I mean, this, especially as Israel's actions are getting more and more outlandish, this latest thing of gunning people down, showing up for food. Look, I understand there's narratives. These narratives get told to us, and there's always more to a story than what we hear. I get that. I do. I get that. There may have been something more to this story than just simply innocent people show up for food and Israeli soldiers, you know, gun them down. However, even if you want to make that argument, the fact of the matter is the situation itself, even if there's details that we're not privy of, the situation itself has been undeniably created by Israel. You can't deny the fact that they're bombing these massive amounts of civilian areas, which is, by the way, the opposite tactic that Russia has used in Ukraine. Russia's just been so restrained in their actions in Ukraine as to almost be ridiculous. They have bent over backwards to avoid civilian casualties. Nobody can argue against that in good faith because it's demonstrably so. It's not to say that there's no civilian casualties, but they have been remarkably restrained in the way they have worked and bent over backward to avoid civilian casualties. Now, you contrast that with Israel's actions, and all they're doing is bombing hospitals, schools, refugee caravans, and they have the same excuse. Every time they shoot up these people showing up that are starving, showing up to get flour, and their response is, oh, well, Hamas was there. Oh, well, Hamas, there were terrorists there. We were just shooting the terrorists or something. We bombed the hospital because there was Hamas. They don't know. Well, how did they know there was Hamas there? They never tell you that. You notice that? They drop a giant bomb provided by the U.S., of course. They drop a giant bomb on a Palestinian hospital, and then they turn around and they say, oh, well, that's because there was Hamas there. How the hell would they even know? What, the pilot flying over and dropping the bomb? He could see him. He looked out the window. It's like there was a guy standing out there going, Allah Akbar, waving a Hamas flag. How the hell would they even know? They're just bombing everybody. I mean, yeah, they're just hoping as they carpet bomb everybody. I'm sure they're killing some Hamas dudes. But to sit here and act like, oh, well, Hamas was there. Hamas was there. The U.S. media, of course, is completely covering this up. I mean, I watch my 90 seconds of the network narrative here in America every morning as I get my second cup of coffee going for the day. And I can tell you there's been like zero coverage of this. All they're talking about is the weather or climate change or the latest celebrity goings on. They're not talking about this at all. You would think this would be a big news story. Israel mows down a bunch of people showing up, starving people showing up to get some flour because they've been having to eat animal food to try to stay alive. You would think that would be a story worth mentioning. Nope, there was a blizzard. There was a blizzard in California. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about that instead. And yet, they try to play this as constantly the victim. At some point in time, look, this Holocaust card is running out of juice. I mean, and they themselves are the ones wringing it out of juice. I realize that people in the West, you know, they're programmed cradle to grave. It's like, you know, it practically like in preschool. You know, what'd you learn in preschool today, little Timmy? I learned about the 6 million. And that goes so far. I'm not saying that you're going to hit a point where people start saying things like, well, maybe there really wasn't a roller coaster that was jettisoning people into the ovens, or maybe 6 million weren't gassed to death in fake shower rooms with insecticides. I don't think that you necessarily are going to reach a point of that. But I do think we're quickly approaching a point where people just don't care. And that's just as effective. You know, people get hung up on, we got to get people convinced and understand that, look, a lot of these stories about the Holocaust are just absolute bullocks. But when you reach the point that people just don't give a shit, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter. And when you have things like gunning starving people down, they're desperately trying to get some flour, and you think you can just show up at the UN as long as you put the star on and remind everybody of the 6 million, that somehow, you know, that's your shield, that's your blank check that you can do anything you want to and people aren't allowed to question it, you're going to hit a point very quickly, because we're going on close to 100 years since, you know, we're at over 80 years now on this. You're just going to hit a point where people say, look, I don't care. That was generations ago. All of the people involved basically are dead now. Can we just move on? Because we need to talk about what's happening now. You know, I mean, it'd be like if you had a fight with your spouse, if you were married and you had a fight with your spouse because you caught them cheating, like you walk in and your spouse is cheating and you confront them about it. And instead they want to talk about, yeah, but you see, you remember like 20 years ago, you've been married a long time, 20 years ago, you were talking to that person, that other, you were talking to that girl. You just try to deflect. We want to talk about something from years ago instead of what's going on right now, as if that has anything to do with it, when it doesn't. They're wringing this Holocaust thing out. I really believe we're finally getting to the point that it's about played out. And again, I don't mean to the point where people start saying, yeah, some of these stories are a little far-fetched. I mean, sitting in a tree and crowing like roosters, I think that's a little out there. It doesn't seem very realistic. I don't even think you're going to, like I said, I don't think you're going to talk about that, but you are, I think, really, we're on the precipice of a point where people just say, look, I don't care. I don't care about your little star, David. I don't care about how many shoes are at the Holocaust Museum. I just don't care. You're doing it to real living people right now. That was generations ago. Real sad that that happened to your ancestors. But I mean, at what point in time do we move on and talk about what you are doing to these people right now on the ground? You know, gunning, you know, if 6 million of you were gassed to death with insecticide several generations ago, that might be really bad, but that still doesn't mean you get to go gun down a bunch of hungry people trying to get some flour off of a truck. This temper tantrum. They're throwing a temper tantrum, and they're throwing a temper tantrum at Russia. Something has happened. Something has changed. And I believe that Russia is actually working to try to stop the conflict from spreading. And there's no way to do that without confronting the party responsible for all of the spreading. We had this quote we just read from the ambassador to the UN from Israel projecting, Russia's causing all of these problems and destabilization. Russia isn't going around attacking its neighbors. Unless you wanted to count the Ukraine thing, and we're not going to get into that because that's been covered to death. Everybody knows circumstances around that. Russia is not going around starting fires in the Middle East. There's one party doing that. The Arab countries are acting with a lot of restraint. People expected a little more. So obviously nobody else in the region wants a wider conflict. There's one party doing it. And again, it just makes sense to speculate that Russia has told them. Something's been said. I don't know if it was just, look, if you bomb Syria again, you're going to lose all your planes. I don't know if it's, if you try to bomb Lebanon, we're going to provide them with air defense. I don't know if it's, look, here's the contract. We're ready to sign to give advanced anti-air capability weapon system to Iran. But something has changed. Like I say, governments don't change policy on an emotional whim like this. Somebody, Russia, has come in and told them they're not going to get to do something that they're bound and determined to do, and they're used to getting their way because they're used to dealing with the United States, which is its lapdog. So something has changed. And, you know, to sit here and act like, you know, to make these statements about we're going to make sure Ukraine wins and we're going to teach you a lesson, it's like, look, look at a map. Look at what country's bigger. Look at what country has more power. You're yapping here. You know, I mean, look, without the U.S. support, Israel ceases to exist. We all know this. So basically, Russia has told them, you're not going to be allowed to do what you're trying to do. We're not going to let you spread this conflict. You're going to stop that. And at the end of the day, there's nothing Israel can do about it. So you have this temper tantrum. They're throwing a fit. They're demanding to get their way. I think it's very interesting. very interesting. See where this is going to wind up, where all of this is going to wind up going. Things continue to come to a head. I've said all along, look, this is a world war. It may not look like World War II because it's not World War II. If it was World War II, the U.S. would be poised for success. The Japanese tried to attack Pearl Harbor again. Look at our carrier groups. We're ready. We're ready to strike. This is a different type of war, but it is a world war in the sense that you see every country is picking a side. Ambiguity, we talked recently about, you know, fence sitters are the ones faring the worst. Everybody is forced to pick some sort of side. Israel's tried to be kind of in the middle and not just openly antagonize Russia. And something has changed to where they've thrown that out the window now. And they're openly siding against Russia. And openly siding against Russia means they're openly siding against Iran, which is nothing new. They've been hostile to Iran for a long time, but also openly siding against China. The leaders of these other nations, particularly China, are not blind to this fact. They're not unaware that essentially when Israel comes out and shakes their fist in impotent rage against Russia, they're also shaking their fist at China. As a closing thought, I've already said, though, we all know that if you just snapped your finger and U.S. support disappeared for Israel, Israel basically would just say they're in a lot of trouble. They exist because of U.S. empirical support. I mean, that's, again, I don't know that anybody really denies that fact. And we're seeing, you know, as such, how do I want to put this? As such, their power is multiplied. The United States government and its military is a multiplying factor, and it multiplies their power. As we see the U.S. continue to decline and the U.S. empire continues to crumble and is coming apart, which again I think is pretty much an observable reality, they're looking at their power crumbling and coming apart. And they may come out and make these hysterical statements, but you can rest assured there are people within their government who are looking at these things logically, and they're going, man, you know, without the U.S. supporting us, we're in a lot of trouble. We've spent decades pissing everybody off in our neighborhood of the Middle East, and we're in a lot of trouble. And we're looking at the U.S. and they're falling apart. You know, what's the day after plan? What's the next move? It looks to me like they haven't really thought of one yet. They're just continuing to double down. We're going to wrap up on that note. I thought these were interesting things, an interesting thing to discuss to start your work week off. I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you'll get a chance. I'll be back tomorrow for the Parish of the Patriots program. Dr. Johnson will be up on Wednesday with Orthodox National, as well as back on Thursday for usually geopolitically centered daily national show. And of course, I'll be back on Friday to wrap up the work week here with the final installment for the week of the Daily Nationalist. So we got a lot of content up. I hope you'll get a chance to check it all out. I hope you'll have a good week. Keep the faith. And as always, we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.